G'day, mate. How you going? On tonight's episode of the Lethal Bullet Podcast, we're going to be looking at a film from the 1980s, which is one of those classics of the military genre, and certainly one with the military in the 1980s, after the films like Delta Force and many others, which really wanted to play upon the lone hero, the lone survivor, going out against massive odds. And of course, in this one, we've got Hunter's own Fred Dreyer going out and, of course, causing mayhem as a US Marine in Death Before Dishonor.
All right, lights, camera, action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. There you go.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Well, welcome to, of course, the main flagship show here on the Lethal Mullet Network, of course, called the Lethal Mullet Podcast, hosted by yours truly, Adam O'Brien, the Lethal Mullet. And folks, I've got to say, this is a movie which tonight, you know, you're going to find out about. It is pretty much an action picture only. That's really what it's known for. But I've got to say, back in the 80s when this came out, about probably 88 here in Australia, this was a movie which had one hell of a cover on the VHS. The VHS had this sort of 3D art of Fred Dreyer using his 1911 A1 45 caliber pistol, and it was being raised and lowered as you moved it around, and it kind of had that holographic sort of look to it. But of course, it was two or three images put together on the cover and mapped out that way too. And I was kind of taken aback by the time we got to the DVD, and obviously this new edition years and years later, even though this edition is quite old now too. It's interesting to sort of look at it and think, well, you know, it was a time when the box art was probably better than the films that we were putting out. This is a movie which has some great characters in it, and of course some great stars that will go on to different stuff. Obviously not A-listers, but certainly stars that would move into movies like, of course, Young Guns, and of course Kickboxer sequels. Of course, Sasha Mitchell in this as well. But also we've got Hunter. Yes, the Hunter TV show, which has got actually quite a few actors from it in this one. Not just Hunter himself, of course, the Fred Dreyer, who is just fantastic in this. And is somebody I barely remember. I think, I was living in Brisbane at the time in the mid-80s. And, we're living in one part of Brisbane called Sunnybank. And as I was going to school, I mean, my parents definitely watched Hunter on TV when it was on, because I mean, it was brought over from the United States, and we watched, you know, a certain amount of regular episodes of it until it was on like probably about, I don't know, 8 p.m. something like that on a weeknight, and sometimes on the weekends on the Saturday night. It was one of those, you know, cop shows that everyone just seemed to enjoy. But of course, then, as you know, shows like, of course, Airwolf came out, MacGyver, all these different ones, and obviously were ones, you know, in the wake of shows like that. Of course, shows like, of course, reruns of Starsky and Hutch and Magnum and Knight Rider, which were pretty much the earlier sort of 80s period. But, you know, Fred Dreyer obviously went on to wanting to become obviously a bit of a movie star as well, although he's mainly a TV star. This is pretty much a military film. It's one that's set in the Middle East, set in, I do believe, Jerusalem and all that sort of area, where it was filmed, pretty much in Israel. And, of course, too, it's about the Marines going over to the U.S. Embassy and getting embroiled in a plot to obviously undermine them, and, of course, some extremists, which will, of course, set up into what will be a pretty big action picture. Directed by, of course, Terry Leonard. Now, Terry Leonard, obviously, is huge in the stunt community. He's been for many, many years. And some of his behind the camera on Second Unit and stuff like that on some massive films. And he goes all the way back to, of course, Raiders of the Lost Ark and many other films. Terry obviously doubled Harrison on those big scenes towards the end of the film of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where he's having to go under the truck and work his way down through to the front to take out, obviously, the Nazis who were taking the truck to, of course, where they're going to let out the Ark of the Covenant. Again, great film. And, of course, the stunt work, second to none on that series. You know, it really is some of the greatest stunt work out there. So Terry Leonard really was the right person to do a film like this. You know, he really obviously knows camera, knows how to use stuntmen well, and at the end of the day, really knows his action, doesn't he? Well, we're going to be chatting about that and more here tonight, of course, on the Lethal Mullet podcast. But before we get into that, we need to let you know how to catch this show and many others like it, of course, on the Lethal Mullet Network.
G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You can also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favorite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about deep thought. And deep thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide. Who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course, Dan the Man from Birmingham. All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.
And now it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet podcast.
All right, Jim Cameron's out there, folks. He's everywhere and he's doing interviews and he's saying how, you know, The Way of the Water is going to be the greatest film ever, man. It's got to make some money because if it doesn't, Avatar 32 won't be happening.
And that's pretty much the brunt of what he's doing, folks. He's drumming up ticket sales by going out there and tell you how good this Smurf movie is going to be like. Well, let's just say it will be a spectacle. And I will give this caveat. It is simply this. James Cameron excels in sequels. Everything except for Terminator 2, I do believe that was an overblown kind of film, which pretty much was a remake of the first film, but it was given the sort of heroes that he originally intended. He intended to have Arnold Schwarzenegger play the role of Kyle Reese originally. And somebody like, I do believe it was even O.J. Simpson was up for the Terminator itself. And, of course, Lance Henriksen in some of the paintings of that sort of art. But Benefit of the doubt that Aliens is a fantastic sequel to what is regarded as one of the greatest science fiction films and certainly horrors out there, of course, being the one, the only. Yes, you know the movie, folks. You can say it with me, Alien. Yeah, of course, Ridley Scott and, of course, James Cameron, completely different filmmakers. And I will argue that maybe The Abyss is James Cameron's best film and one that really branches out into something that's not really a good guy, bad guy sort of thing. There is no real bad guys apart from the human beings themselves trying to dominate what is an alien species underwater who is actually trying to save us from ourselves. It's a very interesting story. Without a doubt, his best film, folks, I think, personally. But, of course, he's out there drumming business for that. We've also got now Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. This is an interesting one, folks. We've got, what is to be a de-aged Indiana Jones in the trailer. It's a great trailer, actually, I've got to say. My reaction to it is that it's definitely going to be something along the lines of the original trilogy of films, not Crystal Skull, which I still like for what it was. It's not as bad as people make it out to be. There's some great stuff and there's not so great stuff. But as a movie of the family of the Joneses, it's quite good. Now, in this one we get to see Sulla again. Obviously, John Rhys-Davies is in the start of it. And we get to see, as it goes through, some new characters. Obviously, Mads Mikkelsen is the German villain in this. Working for the Nazis in World War II, some type of archaeologist. Hopefully, he's a little bit like our original contender, of course, Belloc. Let's just hope it's something along those lines. And, of course, down the road, we've got, the great, of course, thing about this being is set in the 1960s. So we've got two time zones, a little bit of a young Indiana Jones prequel part to the main story, which sets it in World War II, of course, at the height of, I think, the Germans running castles and stuff like that. Very, very much like, I guess, Where Eagles Dare and stuff like that. The Germans had a lot of these old castles in and around where they had their armies. And, of course, they used them as headquarters and, of course, great sort of, adventure and an action set piece to take place in something like an Indiana Jones film. The de-aged Indy is probably the best face replacement I've seen so far. And, of course, Lucasfilm isn't known for the best face replacement. You just got to look at, of course, the Book of Boba Fett and, of course, Mandalorian Season 2 and some other things like that too. They just haven't quite got it down just yet. So that part's interesting, folks. But also the main drive of it being in the 1960s and more or less an 80-year-old Indiana Jones. It's going to be interesting. Can he still do all the running and jumping and punching and the bull whipping that we know him for? So I'm very keen to see where it goes. Again, Harrison doesn't sign up for stuff usually if it's horrible. He's got a bit of a track record of things being pretty damn good. There's even some scenes in, of course, a ticker tape parade of the, of course, Apollo astronauts that we see in the trailer. And he's running very Patriot Game style there, or even, shall I say, in the line of fire style, folks. I'm keen to see how this goes next summer in the US, of course, next winter out here in Australia, mate. And I think it's going to take off. I think this will be fantastic. Will there be more Indiana Jones movies? Well, maybe not. But I think a streaming series of young Indy can be done now that we've got this face replacement technology.
Please hang up and try again.
Now it's time for the Lethal Mullet Cafe as we chill back, relax, and look at the trivia, all the detail, the nitty-gritty of the films we are celebrating.
All right, folks, movie in question today is, of course, as we mentioned, Death Before Dishonor. It's an interesting movie. Without a doubt, something that I think even on when it comes to the likes of, VHS, Betamax, all that sort of stuff, back in the day, it was quite good. It was something that was a bang-for-buck movie. I mean, you've got Terry Leonard, one of the greats of working, of course, in the stunt community. He's worked with everybody, pretty much, folks. Who else you got here? You got Brian May, turning the music. Mad Max, anyone? you've also got Brian Keith in this, Joanna Pakula, and, of course, you've got Paul Winfield, as well. He's just about in every action movie, wasn't he? So the main plot of this, which we'll go into a little bit more of in a sec, is a Gunnery Sergeant Burns, played by, of course, Fred Dryer, is in charge of the Marine Security. This is a batch of detachment of the United States Marines set in a U.S. embassy in the Middle East. And from here, a bunch of terrorists attack not only the area but the compound, and, of course, they take a few hostages, one of them being, of course, Fred's commando, an officer, and, of course, one of the Marines as well. From here, Burns will do anything to find, of course, his commanding officer and, of course, his fellow Marines. And it is one of those movies which is a man on a mission, and certainly is a man on a mission in this one. It's great. I mean, you're not looking for realistic military action in this one. This is something a little bit different. It's certainly one that sort of heads towards that. I wouldn't say Arnold Schwarzenegger and Stallone sort of territory, but it is. It's more TV-like, and that's what makes it interesting. So directed by, of course, the stunt great Terry Leonard, written by, of course, another great too, John Gatliff as well, produced by Lawrence Kubik. Cinematography by Don Burgess, edited by, of course, Steve Merkovich. Music by, of course, the legendary Brian May, distributed by New World Pictures. Now, this came out in February 20, 1987. 1987, interesting year. I was living in Brisbane at the time, on the south side of Brisbane, a place called Logan City. And Logan City, you know, there's not a hell of a lot to do. You know, suburban Brisbane, especially in the squalor of the local area of Logan, it was, you know, low-income area. There is some fun stuff to do, you know, BMX bike riding, of course, martial arts and stuff like that. But for the most part, we're all stuck watching these amazing movies because on a Saturday night, you just kick back with your mates, you know, in front of the old concave sets of TV, and you chucked on a VHS. And this was one of those ones which actually was a bit of fun. One of the things I do remember about this is revisiting, of course, Hunter after this with, of course, Frank Driver being, you know, somebody that I think had quite a bit of wit to him, but also, you know, he was an athlete. He was a footballer.
Yeah, so he was a footballer, or basically for us Aussies, it's going to be a little bit different. Obviously, it's a funny game of football you play over there, folks. Yes, Raider Nerd, you heard it here. I'm calling it a funny game. Dry was born in 1946. He's an actor, radio host. Ooh, I kind of like that. That's pretty cool. Screenwriter and, of course, professional football player. Mate, we just call them footy players. You guys got some big words for the football over there. Come on now. And he was born in Hawthorne, California. He's 76 years old. And, of course, he's only a short fella. He's only 1.9 meters tall. Okay, yes, that's tall. 6 foot six, folks. And had a weight of 110 kilos, roughly. And is obviously a big lad. He was what they call a defensive end in the NFL for over 13 years. And he was involved in 176 games. From 1969 to 1981 when he retired. So he's had 103 career sacks with the New York Giants and, of course, also the Los Angeles Rams. Who those teams are and what they do, folks, I have no bloody idea. I'm sure you out there in the community listening to the show tonight who are from the States can let us know. I know if I ask Raider Nerd, he's just going to tell me about the Raiders. So I probably won't know. And he retired, obviously. He went on to become a pretty successful TV actor at the time. And, of course, Hunter was the big one too. And obviously he did quite a few other action things. A lot of it's due to his height, and obviously he's a pretty active guy. So he was born and raised in Southern California. His parents were Charles F. Dryer and Genevieve Nell. And obviously he really spent quite a bit of time in and around LA playing footy. He went to El Camino Junior College and also San Diego State University back in the old days. And from here, of course, got some note at being an athlete. It was at this time that obviously he got the bug, wanted to play something like football. And from here, he was also given some accolades at the time too for working in and around, of course, that said football. One of his teammates was none other than Apollo Creed himself, of course.
Dylan, come on, where's the trophy? Come on, Dylan, come on, where's Dryer? Come on, do it.
Yeah, right, Arnold, that's enough.
Carl Weathers was also obviously part of that team too, which is interesting that, you know, he's one of the teammates back then too. And, of course, he's been involved in a lot of that sort of stuff too. Obviously, as a career in the NFL, he went all the way through those years working with, of course, getting the draft by, of course, New York Giants. And of course, had a pretty big career from rookie all the way through. And, of course, he's been traded to a few different teams. He was the New England Patriots in the 70s as well. And obviously worked his way through to the other teams I talked about too. But we're most interested in him being, of course, the one, the only actor that we know him. And he's got everything. And obviously he's done online that you can check out. So we're going to look at that too. He'd obviously done a little bit of work too in the Super Bowl, doing some ads and stuff like that too. I think may have got him the feel of being in front of the cameras. Of course, a lot of footballers do that, or where they go and out here in Australia, they go into, of course, usually working on the sports as a host, or, you know, somebody behind the scenes, or they do advertisements, one of the two. So he got involved in that too. He appeared on Chips as Lieutenant John Laguerre in the Season 5 episode Force 7. So he'd been in that too. Obviously, in the 90 days he's most known for is Hunter, which we'll talk about in a sec. And he was in that with Stephanie Kramer. And it was a pretty damn long series from what I remember. Were either that or they just cycling those episodes real damn good back in the 80s. And obviously, too, worked in Death Before Dishonor and also in Land's End as well. He portrayed a police chief Masters in Diagnosis Murder. And he also played Sergeant Rock on Justice League as well. Obviously, he'd worked in some other stuff in the meantime, but also he'd worked on some radio too. He believes in nutrition, folks. That's right. He is a very healthy dude by the sound of things too. Dreyer was consuming up to 70 raw eggs yolks a week back in the 70s. And he's also excluded red meat from his diet now and eats chicken and vegetables mainly. Well, mate, I could tell you one thing. I can't say no to steak, so I don't know how I'd go about doing that, I tell you. He also married Tracy Vaccaro, who is a known actress, obviously, too, and Playboy centerfold. They were married in 1983 and divorced in 1988. They have one daughter between them as well, and Dreyer still lives in LA and has his own production company called Fred Dreyer Productions. He's an interesting guy, I've got to say. Again, I think, you know, from what I've seen of it, I mean, I don't know a lot of his material, but he kind of feels like a taller Timothy Oliphant, folks. Maybe with a bit more personality than Timothy Oliphant. Gotta love it. Who else do we have here? We have Brian Keith as Colonel Halloran. So Brian Keith, of what I know, obviously, to be honest, I think he's probably too old and too unfit to be in the military. Because I tell you what, they do work you. They do. Why? Because we are a military family out here. So we know they definitely work you. But Brian Keith, great in, of course, Young Guns, as, of course, one of the many dispatched by the regulators. We also have Casey Walker as Maud, Joanna Pakula as Ellie. Joanna's had a very distinguished career all over the place, doing various different roles, movies, and all that sort of stuff. Obviously, noted for some of the action films that she's been a part of. One of the big ones, Tombstone, obviously, too. Played Big Nose Kate in that. Yeah, she's got a massive nose. Maybe not. Maybe. No, it's just the character's name, folks. But Joanna's fantastic, and a lot of the material she's done over the years, you know, she's able to obviously work into some, you know, really interesting roles in films as well. And I think in this too, maybe doesn't get quite enough to do on screen, but still pretty good. We've got Joseph Guillen as Sergeant Manuel Ramirez. Now, the big one here, of course, apart from Paul Winfield, is Sasha Mitchell as, of course, one of the many Marines in the movie. Now, what's interesting about Sasha is the big fame that we know him for out here in Australia is not his TV work and stuff, but of his work in a franchise which, up until that time, Van Damme had said, I will not do a sequel. No, no, no sequel for me, no. No, I cannot do a sequel to, no, no, no. kickboxer. No. And of course, he didn't do it. That changed his tune many, about 20, maybe 25 years later, when we got, of course, a number of what we would call, definitely not sequels, they're reboots. And I wouldn't say they're better. Kickboxers, again, one of the top five Van Damme films. It's a great movie. You know, you get Tong Po. You know, it is great. Now, the sequels had Tong Po, without a doubt, but no Van Damme. And from there, of course, Sasha Mitchell stood in and basically took over as the lead in at least the first few sequels. And, of course, Mark Dacascos was in one of the, I think, Kickboxer 5. Are they up to 5 yet? Is it 6? I lost count, folks. But, of course, such a he's great, I think, in this too. Like, the Kickboxer 2 is actually not a bad flick. It's actually pretty decent. But what I do love about Sasha is, you know, he's probably a better actor than Jean-Claude and is able to at least get that across too. Paul Winfield as the ambassador. Now, of course, Paul Winfield, we know, of course, from Terminator, Wrath of Khan, and, of course, some great work on Star Trek. Yes, Star Trek. He had a great run, not only on The Wrath of Khan, obviously, but he came back and worked with, of course, Patrick Stewart on one of the greatest episodes of TNG. And, folks, I'm going to make you work. I want you to get out there and actually try and find out what it is. Because if I just tell you, you know straight away, because it's such a seminal episode. It is the greatest episode for Patrick Stewart, I think. And it's all about communication, you know, breaking down the barriers of communication. It's about mythology. It's also about, I think the big thing about that is too, getting to know one's adversary can also lighten yourself to really finding not only like-minded traits, but also real, true friendship. Because when people are in conflict and media res and stuff like that, in the heat of the moment, obviously your emotions and your feelings are in hide and flight and all that sort of, you know, basically your adrenaline's up, right? But what you find is when people are going through that, they also will definitely see where you're coming from faster. I've found life. And I think, too, in that episode, it certainly does it with Darmok. Oh, did I just say it? Well, guess what? You bloody well need to watch it. And I'll tell you what, I'm making Trek, a Star Trek fan podcast with, of course, Mark Newbold in the coming month and into the new year. We'll definitely look at some classic episodes. We're just going to spend a whole episode on ones like that, or Best of Both Worlds, of course. The first episode in particular of that two-parter was fantastic too. And we'll look at some of the movies coming up there too. But fantastic in this. And, of course, you know, he pretty much steals a lot of the scenes in Terminator alongside a great actor, Lance Henriksen, who's just letting him chew up the scenery without a doubt. But, of course, great also in, of course, Wrath of Khan. In that great scene where we see him with, of course, Khan's lifting up Chekhov and going, hang on, Chekhov, you weren't even on the ship. Well, of course, we've got to say he was on the ship, apparently. He wasn't until the second season, folks. And Space Seed was on the first season. Yes, this is true. But maybe Chekhov was just in, you know, the ready room or something like that, chilling out, watching some movies or something. Who knows? All right, so the film itself has some great action scenes. We've got an opening where, of course, we see Dryak pretty much do the whole clandestine commando thing and, of course, tears apart everybody that's in his way. It's a training exercise, so he's got to pull up his own troops on it. And shows superiority as a Marine. He's just too damn big as a Marine. He stands out like a sore thumb. 6'6". Surely there's not many Marines that are 6'6". I mean, 6 foot, yes, but 6'6", folks. That's like the Swede from Heartbreak Ridge. That's huge. Obviously, that's one of the big key parts there too. Of course, then we see a bit of the relationship between, of course, Colonel Halloran and Sergeant Burns. Obviously, Burns' father used to work with Halloran, and there's a bit of course, bravado about the old days there and too, whether the father was doing all the work or whether it was Halloran that was doing all the work. Some great stuff there too. Then we start to see some of the, of course, the jihadi sort of element coming through there too with the bad guys. And, you know, it is pretty much the stereotypical 80s villains. And they don't really step out past that. Really, no better than TV villains, I've got to say, folks. It doesn't really work for me. because there's really nothing to them. They just do what they do and try to look terrifying, and they're not by a long shot. The most interesting element is the marine element, and of course Joanna Pakula, and of course later in the film the Mossad, who are obviously going out to try and take out all of these bad guys as well. Obviously, this being shot in and around, of course, the Middle East in Israel, and of course, you know, it has the a great feel to it. It definitely feels like they're in the heat of the moment in battle and stuff like that too. Firearms wise, folks, obviously, you're seeing a lot of Uzis, Mach-10s, but of course, the venerable at the time Galil assault rifle, which was pretty much like an AK like platform. Of course, the Israeli army at the time were basically making a weapon that was AK in operation, like, but they made it to suit them with bipods, and obviously some of them had the SKS-like bayonet lug under it, of course, that flipped out. And also the operation of the weapon too had better catch lever for where you load it and stuff like that too. And of course, the great big 30-round mag. And I do believe they came in both 7.62mm and, of course, 5.56. Since then, obviously, they've gone onto different platforms like the M4 or the HK-46. And of course, now they've got a brand new rifle, which is bullpup design as well over there too. So again, those were used in the film as along with, of course, the M16A ones with, of course, the troops. And, of course, Fred Dreyer using his 45 1911A1 as well. I can't remember if he actually used that in Hunter as well, which was, you know, something that I really have to revisit more of that show, without a doubt, particularly Hunter. All right, so you've heard about the film. Let's talk about quickly about the TV series, which, you know, up to you folks. We may look at down the line whether this is worth looking at. And it ran for quite a while. It went from 1984 to 1991. Of course, Fred Dreyer plays Rick Hunter. Folks, get it? Rick Hunter. Come on. Come on. Obviously, Rick Hunter. Come on. And Stephanie Kramer played, of course, Sergeant D.D. McCall. Rick Hunter. Gotta love it. Rick Hunter. My goodness, you know, really? I mean, can we really? Stephen J. Cannell was the basically the brains behind this, and really kickstarted, again, another great series. I'm a hell of a producer. It was created by Frank Lupo. It's basically a mystery thriller crime drama series. And, of course, there's some great names in this. We've got Bruce Davison, John Amos, also, we've got here folks of name, Perry Cook, Richard Beauchamp, Courtney Barilla, Garrett Morris, James Whitmore Jr. as well, Lauren Lane, Arthur Rosenberg, and of course, Darlene Flugel as well. Ran for 7 seasons, folks, you know, and it was a hell of a thing. It really is. So this was a Tuesday night TV show in the United States. And also a Friday night show, by the, if I remember right, reading the history of this series a little while back. And again, you know, it was one of those ones that definitely was out in competition to shows like Dallas at the time and many others. And even from the pilot episode, it really had a good feel. You know, the chemistry behind, of course, of being Fred Dreyer and Stephanie Kramer together really worked. And it's something that made the show continue, and definitely one that was, you know, at the time brought out by Lorimar Pictures, which I knew more for, of course, The Last Starfighter at the time. Yeah, Lorimar logo, and you hear the dum-da-da-dum-dum-da-da-dum. Yeah, Last Starfighter, folks. And I tell you what, if you out there tonight listening to the show want us to do a special on The Last Starfighter, we'll put that out in the next couple of weeks without a doubt. That's something that have been – maybe that's the Christmas show, folks. We'll look at The Last Starfighter. We all love the gun stars, yeah, man. But getting back to it, yeah, so this definitely looks like that feel, without a doubt. So ran right through to 1991. A few changes here and there along the way. Obviously, you know, like anything, life changes, everything moves. And I think one of the great things about this is that as good as the show was, I have not seen it since probably the 90s, so which is really interesting too. So can you find this series out there? Well, in 2005 and 2006, it was put out, and it was put out on DVD, but poor sales, they decided not to put out more. But, of course, looks like it's going through a rights issue right now as to whether that's going to come back and put out fully. So in 2015, it looks like a company called Tiberius Film in Germany released Hunter the Complete Series, which is a 42-disc collection of 152 episodes with episode guide and everything. So you can get that from Germany, which is interesting. So whether that goes through, be interesting. 2009, there was a film adaptation announced and a screenplay by both Fred Dreyer and Frank Lupo. And it was going to be directed by Lupo for Columbia Pictures and Corbett Films and Warner Brothers Pictures, folks. Interesting. So for this show, the show was on regional networks at the time, but in Brisbane alone, it was on Channel 7, which is what we call Prime out here too now. But Channel 7 back in the days was when it was on. It was on Thursday nights, and it was, from what I remember, it was like 7:30 or something like that when it came out. But it was also, I do believe it was some of those ones that changed here and there, so who knows. But it was quite good. But there's also Sledgehammer, which was kind of a, I don't know if they meant to be a spoof of this show or not, but was certainly up there. But, all right, Death Before Dishonor, folks, gets a 3.5 out of 5 on, of course, the Hallenbach scale. It's a great movie to rewatch. Doesn't quite have the lasting value of action movies in the 80s that the others do. And I think part of it is just maybe development of the bad guys. The bad guys are weak as piss. And, of course, for that, yeah, you lose a little bit of the score. This is the Lethal Mullet, folks. We'll catch you next week where we'll be looking at some other great stuff here on the network. Till then, keep sailing, and we'll see you then.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.